Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. The third and final hour of your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. We have the Friday roundtable coming in tomorrow. Still kind of putting the pieces together for that, but I expect Max Reimer will be joining us along with a hit from Representative Tom Emmer. Got some breaking news here, John.
Oh,
that's breaking news.
Mm-hmm.
The number of U.S. workers filing new claims for unemployment benefits fell last week, pointing to continued strength in the labor market. Apparently, this came as a surprise to some economists. Economists were predicting a slight rise in unemployment claims.
Oh, okay.
But it actually fell. It dropped 10,000 to a seasonally adjusted to 204,000 for the week ending January 11th, according to the Labor Department. So the labor market, the job market, the economy still continuing to perform very strongly. The markets, when the China trade deal happened yesterday, just went bananas. It was a very, very good day for the markets based on phase one of the trade deal getting signed.
There was a China trade deal yesterday?
Yeah, you wouldn't know it, would you?
No, nobody would know it.
Wow.
So there's an interesting bit here before we get to the Amy Klobuchar story. Steve Bannon was on CNBC, a show hosted by a guy named Kyle Bass.
That's a name I've not heard in a long time.
And basically, Bannon says that the Trump quote unquote trade war has broken the Chinese Communist Party. Now, take that for what it's worth. You know, it's Steve Bannon. He's known to engage in a bit of hyperbole from time to time.
A little bit.
I don't think the Communist Party is broken, but this was a huge win for the Trump administration.
Yeah,
this really was. I mean, he went toe to toe with China. We've been told for years that there's nothing we can do about China. We're at their mercy. You know, we get all their product from them. We like our cheap product. You know, there's nothing that can be done about the China problem. This is just the new reality that we live in.
But Trump
basically said, no, screw that. We're going to go toe-to-toe with them. We're going to put some tariffs on. It's going to be painful. It's not going to be the most popular move, but it was necessary, apparently, to get to where we are now.
But Drew, Nancy Pelosi had custom-made pens.
Oh, I forgot.
To sign the impeachment articles to send it to the Senate.
I forgot. Let's all custom welcome President Warren.
Yeah, and she said, today we will make history when she signed the documents. This president will be held accountable for stuff and things. That we didn't. He'll be held accountable for beating Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, that's really what they're holding him accountable for.
I wish they would just say it. I wish they would. God, it'd be so great. I'd have so much. I would have. There'd be a little bit of. Okay, maybe I'm never gonna respect him. But be that as it may, at least you'd be honest. At least you would be being honest, right? This president will be held accountable for beating Hillary Clinton. Just be honest about it.
He wasn't supposed to
do that.
He really wasn't.
It wasn't supposed to happen.
It was her coronation. Happy birthday to this future president. Remember that tweet?
Yes.
Remember that? Happy birthday to this future president. She tweeted herself.
Oh.
I cannot think of too many examples of a greater display of arrogance than tweeting a picture of yourself as a child on your birthday, wishing yourself a happy birthday and calling yourself a future president.
And then losing. I know that whenever we go down this road,
that was so funny.
I know when we go down this road, we always mention it. But on the list, like the top five things that, like my top five memory burns, right? Those things that you always remember the feeling in that election night, man, and just watching the states. And seeing the list, and then the moment where you just kind of go, is he really going to...
Holy crap.
Is he really going to do this?
He's going to win this thing.
And then I forgot what, I think it was ABC, but they had the meter. I'll never forget the meter. With the likely, unlikely meter.
That Hillary Clinton was going to win.
Just slowly move.
If you have...
slowly go the other way.
If you subscribe to Hulu... I think it's Hulu. If you subscribe to Hulu, and I'm sure you could probably find it on YouTube as well. If if you're ever bored one day, all right, we're getting a bunch of snow this weekend, right? So this is going to be a good weekend to kind of sit in and binge something.
Yeah, and I'm going to be stuck inside. I'm really bummed out about it.
There's still a lot of those election night specials available to be watched on streaming, like Stephen Colbert's big election night extravaganza, where he had bands booked and celebrities and balloons and confetti and celebrations planned and all of these things for election night. And it's really funny to go back and watch those and just watch the tone slowly shift.
It's incredible.
From elation and celebration and happiness and glee to despair.
Excellent.
Sam's so happy.
I love
it. This is like manna for her soul.
It was so great. Well, I'll never forget watching on the TV. I mean, you have like a live view of the like Hillary Clinton victory party and different Democratic victory parties from all around the country. And then you have a live view of like the GOP ones. And the Democratic party started off as like these just high energy, super, everybody was super excited, and the GOP ones were like reasonable, you know, everybody's kind of pretty pumped. And then as the night went on and on and on, all of a sudden the Democratic ones, they all just stood around like zombies.
Yeah.
and the GOP ones were just rock parties.
Well, and let's bring this back to the conversations that we were having this morning. And what is it that we're talking about? We're talking about that arrogance again, right? And it really is amazing to me that the Democrats, you know, they're like young juvenile children that aren't learning their lesson, right? Because the arrogance never stopped. They never stopped with this inevitable mentality. It still continued. You would have thought for as epic a shellacking that inevitability of Hillary Clinton winning was, you would think that there would be lessons that were learned, and yet all they've done is continued to double, triple, and quadruple down on that same level of arrogance. Well, he must have done something with the Russians. Millions of dollars out of the way. Nope, didn't do anything with the, you know, with the Russians. I mean, he must have wanted to go and bribe the Ukrainian president, who's like, I don't know what he was trying to bribe me. It's news to me. It's just, that arrogance, and it permeates not just in Washington, but right down here to the state level as well. Just it's pure unadulterated arrogance coming from the left that they know better about everything than anybody else does.
Yep, and if you don't agree with them, if you don't think that their way is the right way, they will use the blunt force power of government to bludgeon you into submission.
One,
you will comply.
We'll run you over with a monorail car.
Oh, wait, they're all
strapping to the. That's right. Oh, got to go to Wisconsin, that dude's hill, climb underneath it if you want to get run over by it.
I don't want to ride in a monorail. I want to drive my car. Sorry. You will comply.
That's what they ought to do. They ought to turn the monorail track at the zoo instead of a walkway to a motorway.
Into a road.
Yeah, you can drive your car on it. That'd be great.
Drive-through safaris are so cool. I'm not even joking. Do that.
Have you been to one of those?
Yeah.
I've never been to one.
I went to one at a Six Flags somewhere on the East Coast. I can't remember when we were visiting family in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I just remember a giraffe coming up and licking the window. I thought it was so cool.
We should all be like co-governors. We should all. We should run the state and just be all three of
I
know we kind of do our
kind of shadow run every now and then. Although now that Zerwas is out, I mean, our in.
Yeah, Zerwas was
damn
our...
you, Nick!
What are we going to do now?
When James T. Harris, our fellow iHeartRadio host, joins us at 8:35 this morning, filling in for Katie Pavlich, who's on vacation right now, we will be discussing with James a couple of these bombshell videos showing this Bernie Sanders staffer advocating for riots, gulags, and shootings. So we'll get into that with James T. Harris later on in the show. Let's go here real quick. There's an article in the Star Tribune, came out this morning. Minnesota U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar faced off against fellow Democrat presidential candidates Tuesday night in the final nationally televised debate ahead of the Iowa caucuses, which, by the way, I was just looking. Apparently, there's a lot of shenanigans going on in Iowa right now. There's a lot of making up of the rules when it comes to, you know, the voting here in the next few weeks. Be that as it may, though, the article goes on to say the Minnesota Democrats still trailing the top four rivals in the polls.
That ain't going to change.
Focus much of her energy on Trump,
According to the Star Tribune's Stephen Amata-Mayer, strong performances in recent debates resulted in a boost in fundraising and positive coverage. So how did Tuesday's showing compare? And then they go through a list here of what leading publications and pundits are saying. And it's not, there's a couple of good positives in here. For the most part, it's not very good. But here's the question that I have, though. Is it appropriate for the media here in Minnesota to treat this coverage of Amy Klobuchar like she's a sports team, like it's the Vikings out on the road? They feel emboldened. Like, I understand, like I said before, she represents an area of Minnesota. I get that. Okay, but they're treating her like it's a franchise, like all the states should be like, woohoo, rah rah sis boom bah, that Amy Klobuchar is running for president,
because that's how they are. I mean, they won't admit it, but I mean, that, you know, when you talk about the inherent implicit biases that every human being has, I think there is a strong inherent implicit bias in favor of Amy Klobuchar on your average journalist, you know, your average Star Tribune writer, your average journalist in this state. She's our hometown girl. We should be rooting for her. We want to see her do well. We want to make Minnesota proud, represent Minnesota well. Well, that's her job in the Senate. That's why we elect her to go be a senator. Mm. And she's not being a senator right now, and she hasn't been being a senator for a very long time. She's been running for president. Now, when Tim Pawlenty ran for president, it did not get this kind of treatment. It did not just get this kind of rooting on. I mean, it was largely ignored, if I remember correctly. Most of the coverage was just not even there. But Amy Klobuchar, she's, you know, the senator next door. She's Minnesota's favorite daughter.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I just, and again, I don't really have
To answer your question, no, it's not appropriate.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was wondering, because I was a little bit conflicted on it. Like, I understand the coverage. I do. I get that. There's interest there. They obviously get some hits off of it. But this has gone well beyond just sort of a smattering of it. I mean, if it was just resigned to debate coverage, right? This is essentially debate coverage, right? So this is probably the wrong article to have picked up on this, but this is coming on the heels of article after article after article on a weekly basis of her out on the campaign trail, and I can't, I sit back and it's going to go, yeah, but a lot of people don't like her.
Right.
You know, and right. I'm not just rooting for her because she's, you know, I'm not just rooting for her because she's from the state. I'm not doing, and a lot of people aren't doing that.
Yeah, I didn't vote for her.
Right.
I'm not going to vote for her. I'm not going to vote for her if she runs for Senate again, which she probably won't. Bill in Brooklyn Center, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I just read an article in Fox. Senator Blackburn, I believe it was, said that Warren, Sanders, and Klobuchar should recuse themselves since they're running against him for president. What are you guys' thoughts?
I think it's a fair conversation to have, but ultimately it's not going to happen. But I think it's a fair question to raise up, and it's something that I think, you know, should be asked of those senators. You know, can you be impartial? But
wow, I hadn't even thought about that until now, honestly.
Thanks for your call, Bill. But the question is somewhat based on a false premise that senators are supposed to be like jurors. They're not. Impeachment's different. The question is being tried in the Senate, but it's not, the senators are not jurors in this impeachment trial. And so there's no expectation of impartiality like you would in an actual trial.
I would be interested to see if they wouldn't recuse themselves just from the angle of having to come off of the campaign trail.
But they're not allowed to do that.
They're not allowed to do what?
To stay off to be able to go back out on the campaign.
But if they recuse themselves from voting, could they return?
I don't think that would exempt them from.
Okay, voting. Okay.
I don't think that would exempt them.
That would be the only rationale in my mind, because once they start on this trial, they're not allowed to do anything. Mm-hmm. You can't go. I mean, they technically could leave and then come back, but they'd have to be there for all of the of the trial taking place.
I don't know that that recusing themselves would exempt them from those rules. I'm not versed enough to know.
I'm kind of with, we'll talk with James T. Harris more about this coming up, but I'm kind of with Jesse Kelly yesterday. And if you missed the conversation, listen to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm kind of with Jesse that I wish that this would go to the Senate and the Senate would just kill it as soon as possible and just move on with life. To me, that's in their best interest. I know there's some talk about doing sort of a one-for-one when it comes to witnesses. So, okay, if you get Bolton, then we get Hunter Biden.
I think it's in the GOP's best interest to just dispense with this, let the news cycle handle the coverage on it. They'll be forgotten about it, and then we move on with life. But it, there seems to be a desire, and I get it, to kind of try to stick it to them. And I'm just, I feel better just moving on.
I waver back and forth a little bit, but I do find myself leaning a little bit more towards the drag it out and use the same sort of tactic that the House did. You know, take advantage of all the coverage that is going to be that is going to happen here. Take advantage of the networks, you know, cutting in the normal programming and broadcasting these hearings and broadcasting this impeachment trial to you know, during daytime TV when people are expecting prices right. Let's make a deal in Days of Our Lives. Take advantage of that. You're going to have access to a lot more eyeballs and a lot more ears than you would normally have. So why not do what the House did? And have a completely partisan, one-sided affair where you're able to make your case over and over and over and restrict and limit your political opponent's ability to do the same thing. That's exactly what the House did. And everybody was fine with it when the House did it. All of these networks and all of these pundits and all these people didn't raise a peep when that's what the House was doing. The Senate gets to do whatever it wants to do with this right now. So I see the value in both sides, but I do find myself leaning more towards, hey, man, it's politics. Politics is dirty. Politics ain't beanball or whatever the hell that phrase is. Just go ahead and take advantage of this opportunity.
Yeah, but Drew, they got some random guy that has handwritten notes.
Undated. Unverified, handwritten note,
but they
say things.
They say stuff on.
Yeah, I know that's really, Trump's dead now, man.
He's
screwed now. Somebody found a handwritten note with no date.
We're going to switch gears briefly before we talk with James T. Harris. We have a couple of different articles here. They relate to movie and exercise. There is a correlation. By the way, we'll start off first, though. Exclusive interview out of Variety magazine with the keepers of James Bond made what was to many people a startling sort of claim of the future of James Bond that has many individuals very upset. And we'll get to that next.
Radio host, frequent fill-in for our good friend Glenn Beck's program, James T. Harris, going to join us in the next segment, be about 10 minutes from now.
You like yourself some James Bond? You a fan of the Bond?
Not a huge James Bond fan, but I do enjoy a good James Bond flick every once in a while. I very much have enjoyed the Daniel Craig iteration.
Yeah.
Of James Bond. I've liked those movies quite a bit.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I've watched all the old ones. There's an in-depth interview with the keepers of James Bond in Variety magazine, and search it out if you're a fan of the Bond films, because they address a lot of the issues of the older movies and just how goofy they got in the Pierce Brosnan years and all that kind of stuff. We're most likely going to be bringing back Movie Talk for those that are familiar with it, and so it's kind of a bit of a preview. So there's a couple stories here. This is interesting, though. So the Broccolis, for those that don't know, the Broccolis are the ones that own the rights to it. They were
their last name is Broccoli.
Broccoli, yes.
Is it just broccoli, but pronounced Broccoli?
Mm-hmm. Yep, pretty much. One family.
Love that.
The Broccolis.
Broccolis. And their kids are the Broccolinis.
Barbara Broccone, right? She's one of the Broccolis. So there was an arrangement.
You're never going to get through this story if you keep saying Broccoli.
I have to, though, because they're all over the story, so Sam's going to have to suck it up.
I just love it. It just makes me happy.
In an arrangement that was first hammered out by Broccoli's father, the producer, Albert Cubby Broccoli.
It's like you're trying to torture me.
I know. This was back when John F. Kennedy was president, right? The elder Broccoli died in 96. And then he seceded control to his two children with the 95 release of GoldenEye. Okay. A film that proved a sexist super spy conceived by novelist Ian Fleming's 1950s still had a role to play in a post-Cold War cinema. Okay. I am getting to a point here. On April 10th, okay, No Time to Die will be the 25th Bond adventure. that will hit U.S. theaters, representing a moment of both triumph and uncertainty for the series. Side note, by the way, this is how they need to go and treat the future of the Star Wars franchise. Just a series of cinematic movies. Get out of the trilogy angle of it. Just make Star Wars films and leave it at that. Okay. Let's see. I lost my spot here. This serves as the culmination of Daniel Craig's critically acclaimed, massively successful five-film run. Five, right, 007. This time, after threatening to turn his back on the series for years, the star is insistent this is going to be his last Bond film. Okay? Further in the piece, though, media has begun speculating about who will step into Bond's impeccably tailored tuxedo. Everybody from Idris Elba to Richard Madden finding himself at the center of the chatter. Broccoli and Wilson, the keepers.
It's spelt just like broccoli.
I know, it's broccoli. Insist that they have started to map out a post-Craig world. They're focused on completing No Time to Die, an enormous $250 million production. They seem open to broadening the search beyond the usual suspects. You think of him as being Britain or the Commonwealth, but Britain is a very diverse place, Wilson says. For better or worse, we are the custodians of this character. We take the responsibility seriously. There are certain things the duo appears to be considering and other conversations that are non-starters when it comes to selecting the next Bond. He can be of any color, but he is male, says Broccoli. This is Barbara Broccoli. I believe we should be creating new characters for women, strong female characters. I'm not particularly interested in taking a male character and having a woman play it. I think women are far more interesting than that.
I love what she's saying. Yep. I agree with her 100%. I think that people saying, like, why can't a woman play James Bond? Like, okay, no, why can't a woman be her own individual, you know? I mean,
yeah, just make a new character.
Person.
Yeah. 008.
Yeah, just make a new character.
Yeah, make 008. I don't care.
Yeah. Look, if you want to make, I don't know James Bond canon, but, you know, I've heard the idea that 007 is just a designation that can be given to anybody.
Sure.
And that, you know, and James Bond is just a code name.
It's true.
Yeah, and that's fine. Whatever. And if they end up casting a female in that role, if it's a good movie, I'll enjoy it and I'll go see it. I'm not going to just rule it out simply because of that. You know, if it gets good reviews and it's got some good buzz and I like the way it looks, then I'll go see it. I don't really care that much. You know, I'm not the sanctity of the 007 character means absolutely nothing to me. But why do you have to keep cramming females into roles that, you know, we all have accepted and understand to be male characters? Make up something new.
Yeah,
Make up a brand new character and a brand new franchise. You have a huge opportunity here to take the James Bond formula of a movie. You can take that same sort of arc and that same sort of formula. It's been done a million times with a million different characters, and just cast Sandra Bullock or whoever. I don't care. And give it a different name and a different designation. You can still make the same movie and you won't have to deal with all of the people out there going, why are you casting a female as James Bond?
And it can just be like that character can just be its own unique character.
Yeah.
You don't have to have the female version of James Bond. Like, that's almost going against what I'm sure that they're trying to accomplish, which is like equality or something. But equality is not,
or something.
Well, equality or something is not just creating the female version of James Bond. It's creating a strong character who has their own personality and their own story.
But there's something, and I'm in the middle of, and I agree with both of you guys. My take on this too goes specifically to, and I don't have a huge vest. I like James Bond. I don't have a huge vested interest in it. I don't care that much. That being said, the character of James Bond is a man. That's end of story. The way that character is designed, his characteristics, you know, how sexist he is and somewhat misogynist. I mean, that is in the DNA makeup of Ian Fleming's creation of that character. So for me, that alone is like, no, you're right. Just make a different 007, make him female.
Fine.
But what James Bond represents as a character, I'm sorry, does not work with a woman. James Bond is a bit of a loser to a certain extent, right?
Yeah.
He's a womanizer. And then that's throughout the films. And there's a social dynamic to him and the relationships that he has with the Bond girls. They're evident in all of the films. It doesn't work going the other way. It just doesn't. I mean, it may work in a woke society where we're watching and it reminded me of this, and I wanted to mention it briefly because I know I'm going to get a reaction out of you two. We're watching this Netflix competition show. It's glass blowing. It's called Blown Away. We were talking about it yesterday. There's one particular woman on there, very woke. She's incredibly, incredibly woke.
Fun.
One of the challenges for the one we watched last night was they had to create. They bring in somebody from the outside to represent the expert for whatever the inspiration is for the theme of that particular episode. So this was a futurist.
Mm-hmm.
So the glass blowing was supposed to be representative of a robot in the future.
Okay.
Create something that is representative of something that you might see in the future. First off, these glass blowers have no imagination whatsoever because most of them got it completely wrong. One woman, though, the woman that won, you know what she made? She made it was a glass blown apparatus that will be, in her mind, and taken completely serious by all of the judges on the show and the host, in her mind, represents the future where men will carry around these sacks and will be giving birth to babies.
What?
In these over-the-shoulder harnesses. And in her mind, she said, this will, you know, this is a very, very important issue in the future.
What?
Men will be wearing these apparatuses so that we can strip away this gender inequality when it comes to the birthing of a human,
of a human person.
Oh, and so men will now be able to shoulder the
inequality when it comes to birth.
Right. Men will be able to shoulder the burden in birthing children, so it won't just have to be women who are birthing the future.
It is science.
Men will be able to as well.
Oh my god!
And basically, it was she blew the, it was like a backpack that you would wear on the front that where you have an embryo in it. You'd carry, and men would wear it, and they would carry it to term. And the, I couldn't. I'm watching this, and the judges were like, "Wow, you know." And the futurist was like, "Oh, totally." This is one of the most important issues that we're going to be facing in our lifetime in the future.
That meteor could not hit soon enough.
Isn't that, I couldn't believe what, and the fact that those judges didn't take it seriously. They went along with it because they were too afraid to be honest and look at that person and go, "You're a lunatic."
Yeah, well, they did that. Then they'd get woke Twitter turning on them pretty, super quick.
I was stuck. And then they won. They only won because you were being woke.
Yep.
It was, I had never heard that before. And the fact of how quickly they were all like, totally, you know, she's like, this way, you know, why are women the only one that have to carry a child to full term?
You don't want men doing that job. Men cut corners. Men try shortcuts. Men, you know, yeah, I got an idea.
Beyond that, it's just not the natural order of things.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Like,
yeah. You have babies coming out with like duct tape and WD-40.
If I turn the heat up on this, can I cook it faster? I know that the pizza says it's not microwavable safe, but surely if I leave it in the microwave long enough, it'll cook just like the oven does.
Tom in St. Paul, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. So I know you're kind of playing devil's advocate with the Bond thing, but I think you know as well as I do, this isn't really about what it appears to be about. To me, it reminds me of the wedding cakes. It reminds me of girls in the Boy Scouts. My question is always, why don't you go to one of the other 200 bakers that would gladly provide your cake? But the answer is invariably to infiltrate an organization that probably ideologically they don't want to belong to in the first place.
You kind of lost me there, Tom.
James Bond.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think what I'm saying is you're absolutely right that this is a franchise just waiting to happen, but really, the goal is to ruin the misogynistic old way of doing things. I think that they would gladly torpedo a very successful franchise to prove a point.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you could be right.
This is a really good. There was a great Always Sunny in Philadelphia that actually ended up
not for the faint of heart.
Not for the faint of heart, and I don't recommend stuff for that reason alone. Depending on what you like, but there was a particular episode where they And it was so poignant because they went to go see, they were a test audience for this new action film, and what they ended up experiencing was sort of the woke version of, it'd be like going and watching a woke version of Die Hard.
Yeah, they basically took, you know, they've got this fake, they call it Thunder Gun, this fake action movie franchise, but just think Rambo, right? It's like a Rambo kind of franchise. And they went to test screen the newest release, and it was very woke. You know, and it was kind of a play on these movies where now Rambo's old and he's got to go on one last adventure.
right.
Now Wolverine is old, and you know, it's playing off of those, but it was very woke, and they got into this long argument with the studio about how, you know, we need to protect these kind of films. Yes, they're misogynistic. Yes, the female characters in these movies have no agency and they're just there to be objects. Yes, but these films play a role, and there's a reason why these films are out there, and there's an audience for these films, and it's really funny, and it's very, you know, it's really well done, and it shows you that where you used to have the conservatives that were critiquing and restricting art based on moral standards, like that's all kind of gone away. Now you've got liberals are doing the same thing, but they're doing it with their woke standards, and they're scolding all of these movies, and you can't just have gratuitous movies anymore. I like a good gratuitous movie every now and again, and there's nothing wrong with that.
It's escapism for a reason.
Right.
If I want real life, I have it already. And a lot of it sucks a lot of the time.
Right.
I go to the movies to get away from all that.
Give me a fun, gratuitous movie every now and again.
All right. Speaking of
fun. Unnecessary boobs and explosions.
Speaking of fun, gratuitous, and not woke, James T. Harris joins us next.
Second of your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. We will be joined by fellow iHeartRadio host, frequent Glenn Beck fill-in host, James T. Harris, here in just a couple of minutes. Tomorrow on the program, we do have the Friday Roundtable and Representative Tom Emmer joining us.
Bombshell video shows Bernie Sanders staffer advocating riots, gulags, and shootings. The full video of the Bernie Sanders campaign staffer was dropped. It's worse than imagined, according to the article here in front of me.
It's so bad.
Not only does this guy, Kyle Jurek, who has been paid $11,000 so far by the campaign, advocate for putting Americans in gulags, he also talks about plans to shoot Americans who don't fight for the revolution.
This is one of the more underreported phenomenons going on in this country right now, this particular segment of the left that openly is advocating for violence, and they all, not all, but the majority of them seem to really, really like Bernie Sanders. Joining us now, James T. Harris. Good morning, James.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good. So what is it, in your opinion, what is it with these quote-unquote Bernie bros that has become so sort of problematic that, you know, the let's not forget it was a Bernie bro that went to a baseball field and attempted to kill as many Republican members of Congress as he could. And why is it so underreported that the Bernie Sanders campaign has attracted a very, very violent wing of the left right now?
This is the socialist modus operandi. This is what socialists do. They've always been the violent ones throughout history. The leftists, the bombings, the weather underground. I mean, this is how they respond. They behave, especially when they don't get what they want. And the reason why I think the media is not covering it is because to do so would expose that fact, and they'd have to miss out, or they'd have to go back and recount what you just did. You know, the Bernie bro that took a AR to the baseball field and shot up our congressman. This is how they act. But they made a big mistake in this one, because they're talking about if Bernie doesn't get the nomination, then Milwaukee's going to burn. They don't understand. I'm from Milwaukee. Milwaukee's not going to burn. If they try to burn Milwaukee, Milwaukee's going to shoot back. I went in. I laughed when I saw that. I'm like, you don't understand Milwaukee, son. If you think you're going to go to Milwaukee and you're going to start some political mess, especially in downtown Milwaukee, as close to where there's a lot of problems, the problems are going to find you.
Well, here's the problem. It's not just Milwaukee, and it's not just the convention. I mean, what they're talking about is if Trump wins re-election, they've got, you know, these latest videos from Project Veritas and these Bernie bros are openly talking about violence in the streets should Trump win re-election, regardless of who he's running against.
And real quick, James, do you think, you know, and you could obviously respond to Drew, but do you think that this is bluster? You know, is this talk now? Is this tough talk now? And when the time comes and he shellacks whoever the nominee is, they won't do this? Or do you anticipate that there is going to be this type of action?
You know, I forgot who the politician said this, but yeah, when somebody tells you who they are, you should believe them. And when they're talking about doing this, we should believe them. We saw how they responded, how the left responded when President Trump won the 2016. We've seen the screaming in the streets. We've seen the marches. We've seen the resistance movement. If they lose again and they're telling you there's going to be blood in the street, I think we should take them serious. And they were violent during the 2016 campaign when they were infiltrating the Trump rallies, accusing us of violence. They were the ones that were violent. Generally, everything they accuse us of, they end up doing. So when they're talking about blood in the streets, I think we should take it serious. And I think that it's really a crime, a disservice to the country, and naivete that this story has not been covered more than it has.
If it were, do you think it has the chance to move the needle at all? Or do you think that it just, you know, it falls on the ears of those that are paying the most attention? And I'll give you a real small example. Sam had retweeted this yesterday, but somebody had tweeted out that on a recent episode of Jeopardy, one of the questions was, who is this person? And it was a photograph of Adam Schiff, and nobody who was competing in Jeopardy recognized who he was. And so the point that the tweet made was, we do live in a bubble. Understand, the majority of public isn't paying attention to this. So does a story like this, with this sort of exposure from James O'Keefe, have the possibility to sort of move the needle and affect anybody's votes?
Because it's not covered, no. Because people like you, people like me, we pay attention to this. This is what we do. Even if we weren't in radio, I'm passionate about this kind of stuff. I'd be trying to sound the warning bell, but the media doesn't cover it. And for too much of the country, if it's not on TV, it didn't happen.
Yeah. I know that, go ahead.
I'm going to say it didn't happen. But when we look at the violence that we see from the left, when we look at the Golden Globes, when we look at, you know, the commentary from Hollywood left, when we look at the people who are just generally upset. Trump derangement syndrome is real. It's real. And I think that if he's elected again and you have the left ignoring the Bernie Sanders bros who are talking about violence and continuing to whip up these negative sentiments in the same way we're seeing on the Morning Joe, we're seeing on The View, we're going to have some problems.
Talking with James T. Harris, fellow iHeart radio host, frequent fill-in host for Glenn Beck. By the way, before we move on to the next topic, what's that like? How's it like filling in for? We've had the opportunity to fill in years past on some syndicated shows, but I'm curious to get your perspective on filling in for Glenn Beck.
Filled in for Glenn over Thanksgiving and Christmas, which basically means I did not celebrate Thanksgiving and Christmas this year because I was prepping. It was a huge honor, but boy, if you make a mistake, you're making a mistake in front of millions. It was
So which mistake do you regret the most?
I was absolutely flawless.
Of course you were, James.
All right, I know when Sam got you on the phone, you wanted to talk about some recent actions of President Donald Trump and the impacts that they're having. So speak a little bit about what you were referring to with Sam.
Well, you know, I'm living down here in Arizona. As you know, we're on the border. Border wall is going up. And the president, you know, he's redirected some of the military funds. I think it just happened earlier this week. And it's not being talked about. The media is not talking about it. And Schumer and Pelosi are not talking about it. And do you know why? Because President Trump has won on the wall. He's won. And if he gets a second term, he's going to finish it. And it's amazing. It's amazing to me that this president has done so much. We wanted him to win to stop Hillary Clinton, and we wanted the Supreme Court justices put on. Everything else was supposed to be gravy. But it's amazing how we are drowning in gravy, how we are just winning. President Trump said, "I'm going to get tired of winning." Now, the new Chinese deal, the new NAFTA deal. I mean, all of this stuff is happening while the Democrats are steadily moving towards impeachment. Well, they want an impeachment. Okay, they have that. Woo, woo, woo. There it is. You get your victory there. Mission accomplished. But the president is fulfilling his campaign promises, and now it's to the point where it's not even being reported on anymore because it's an embarrassment to the left. They've got nothing, and he's continuing to produce.
Well, and isn't it interesting, too, that you do have construction going on the wall and funding there. For as much as the left, Pelosi and others, pushed back on that and how horrible and awful it was, you would think, James, that they would be highlighting the fact that Trump was now doing this horrible and awful thing. If that was a winning argument for them, they would be letting everybody be shouting, "Oh, Trump's building the wall. Look, he's..." Nope, they know. They know better. They know that it's a winning move for him.
They know it's a winning move for him. They know that it's what the American people wanted. There's no more talk of caravans. There's no more talk of, you know, separating families. All of that has disappeared because, first of all, President Trump wasn't doing that. That's something, as you know, John, started under caging children. That started with the Obama administration.
Yep.
But the fact that he is doing these things, that he didn't stop doing it. Even when everyone was against the tariff war, and we're talking about he's going to ruin the economy. The Dow today yesterday went over 27,000. This we are living in probably one of the most prosperous periods of America's history, and is not being celebrated, let alone talked about.
Yep,
that's what's incredible.
It is amazing the prosperity that this country is enjoying right now should be celebrated, should be lauded. And you know, if you want to give Trump credit for it, or if you don't want to give Trump credit for it, that's fine. I don't care. It's up to you. But you can't deny the numbers. You can't deny the facts. You can't deny the economy. The only thing the left can do is go, "Well, it's not benefiting everybody."
Everybody.
Well, guess what? Guess what? No economy, no matter how well it's performing, is going to benefit everybody. You're always going to have some inequality. The only way you're ever going to get to any sort of true equality in an economy is if everybody is down at the bottom.
Exactly.
And that's what they want.
And yet you still had that report that came out earlier this week that over the last 3 years, the most growth has happened in the bottom half of the country.
Yep. I mean, yep. Yep. The low income wages have been riding, have been rising the fastest. And that's why they won't talk about it, because they know that if more Americans and if more people actually learn the truth about this prosperity that we're enjoying, that they would be less inclined to default to orange man bad. James T. Harris, we are out of time, man. And thank you so much for joining us. Always enjoy chatting
Thanks
with you.
Thanks for having me, man. Always. Thank you.
Enjoy your day, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
This is the portion of the show where we find out, it would be Justice and Drew, whether or not we have done our job appropriately. And there's only one way that we can know whether or not that has happened, and it's with... What's Sam learned today?
Well, around 6:30 this morning, I learned that two Republican women have announced that they're challenging Representative Angie Gregg for her seat in Minnesota's 2nd Congressional District. Around 7 o'clock, we fell down kind of a monorail rabbit hole. I learned about all the money that has been and will be wasted on the Minnesota Zoo's monorail / future walking path / waste of money, all thanks to Governor Tim Walz. Around 8:15, I learned that the masterminds behind the James Bond franchise have said that there won't be a female James Bond, and you can check out the Third Hour podcast from today to hear what our opinions were on that. You can also find any other moments that you missed from the show today by checking out all hours of the show and finding our podcast by searching for Justice and Drew on the iHeartRadio app.
Tomorrow on the program, it is the Friday Roundtable. Max Reimer will be in. I expect to be joined by comedian Brian Miller, but that is unconfirmed at this point. Representative Tom Emmer will join us. We will play the Friday News Quiz at 8:35. Lots of stuff going on tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll have the return of movie talk. We'll also get into this, apparently, according to one story. Right, I got a couple of exercise stories. Watching a movie at a theater apparently qualifies as light exercise.
Ooh, especially if it's Star Wars, because that is some heart-pumping stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. That's why we're friends. Also, would you guys take a pill if it meant you didn't have to exercise?
No, I kind of like exercising.
Drew, you want to take a pill?
Sure. Okay. Why not? Okay.
That sounds like a good way to have a heart attack.
There's also a story out of the New York Post that a lot of Americans actually lie about working out to convince somebody else they're busy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm working out right now.
Sorry, man. I can't.
Sorry.
Very busy.
Yeah, can't help you move.
Very, very tired.
I'm working out.
I'm working
out. You work out a lot.
I'm working out right now.
You happen to work out every time I move. Yeah, I know. It's weird.
I work out all the time. Strange. Check out the results. I'm jacked.
Have a great day, everybody. Try to stay warm. Be safe out there. Cold.
Yeah.
It's really cold out there. And we will be back tomorrow, 6 to 9. Glenn Beck coming up next. Do you hear me? Nah, nah. I don't want nobody. Give me nothing.